Acharya was the first Acharya who coined the term this Chatur Shloki, these seed verses of Bhagavad Gita. And since him, all the other Acharyas have kept that same title or understanding to these four verses. They're the essence of the Gita. Okay, that's where we're at. And they're probably very familiar to you because they get quoted a lot by Srila Prabhupada and other devotees in many lectures because they have so many points. Okay, one other point is what I'm going to focus on in the next 3.5 minutes. No, a few more minutes than that. What I'm going to focus on is sambandha, abhideya, and prayogi. So what that means is the knowledge of the Supreme Lord and our relationship with Him, the process of how to follow that, attain that relationship, establish that relationship, the process of how to establish it, and the goal of developing a relationship with Krishna. What's the goal? So these four verses contain, if we look at it through that lens, you'll see that they're all contained in these four. All that information is contained within these four verses. And this is verse number 8, gives an overview of everything he's going to say. And I'm just going to read it right now, okay? Aham sarvasya prabhava matat sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam bhuta bhava samandita. I am the source. So this is Krishna saying to Arjuna out of his own volition. He's explaining to him who he is. And very directly, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So that contains the three elements of the essence of the relationship between the living entity and the Lord. The Lord's the Supreme, we're His servant. It explains the process of how we can get there, but very succinctly, by worship of Krishna. And it explains also the goal, because the wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts, and attain to the Supreme Lord's abode. So all three aspects of information are contained in that verse. So in Srila Prabhupada's purport there, I actually didn't count the number of quotes, but the whole purport is just a series of quotes from the scriptures proving that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead from different Vedic scriptures. So then in the 9th verse is Machitta Madgata Prana Bodhayantas Parasparam Katayantasyamam Nityam Tushyanticha Ramanticha. Now this talks about what's the process. How do we get to attain Krishna's lotus feet? And here it says, the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. And, tushyanti cha ramanti cha, they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. So that explains, again in a nutshell, but still it's there, what the process is for aspiring devotees who want to reach that ultimate goal of service to Krishna. And service at Krishna's lotus feet. By arranging our lives in such a way that our life and our activities are dedicated to Krishna's service. So that might look different for different people. They might explain it due to circumstances in life. They might have to adopt various means. But Srila Prabhupada, he gave us the basic formula: follow the four regulative principles, chanting 16 rounds, regularly hearing the Bhagavatam, regularly hearing the scriptures. If we can, and how we frame that in our lives will lead to these very progressive, very enlightened, very enthusiastic, very exciting progress that we make. The more we're able to adopt our life, mold our life in that situation, you know. So in this purport here, Srila Prabhupada gives a wide range of information. I'm just going to pick out a couple of things. He says, very interestingly, he says, in the preliminary, this is the second paragraph, in the preliminary stage of devotional service, they, meaning the aspiring devotees, they relish transcendental pleasure from the service itself. Just by rendering the service, whether it's making garlands, decorating the deities, cooking, cleaning, this, that, preaching, so many things. The service itself is pleasurable. And in the mature stage, that they actually become situated in love of Godhead. So everything's pleasurable in that situation. Once situated in that transcendental position, they can relish the highest perfection which is exhibited by the Lord in his abode. There are innumerable living entities traveling through the different planets of the universe, and out of them there are a few who are fortunate enough to meet a pure devotee and get the chance to understand devotional service. This devotional service is just like a seed, and if it is sown in the heart of the living entity, and if he goes on hearing and chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. That seed, the Bhakti Lata, the creeper of devotional service, fructifies just like a seed of a tree fructifies with regular watering. Then Srila Prabhupada continues, the spiritual plant of devotional service gradually grows and grows until it penetrates the covering of the material universe and enters into the Brahma Jyoti effulgence of the spiritual sky. So that's beyond the covering of the material universe is the Brahma Jyoti. But beyond the Brahma Jyoti there is, Prabhupada says, in the spiritual sky also that plant grows more and more until it reaches the highest planet, which is called Goloka Vrindavan. So the process, we've heard that this process of bhakti is compared to a creeper many times and in many different places, and that creeper grows when it's in the proper atmosphere. So we've been given the understanding and the instructions of how to make the atmosphere proper for the seed of bhakti to grow within our hearts, which is what the basic structured program that Srila Prabhupada has given us, and we all try to follow to our best ability. And because of trying to follow it to our best of our ability, however that looks to each one of us, there's a reciprocation that you and I feel within the heart, each from the Lord, for making that attempt. And that's ninth chapter. Krishna says that that the process of devotional service is everlastingly and it's joyfully performed, and the living entity can feel for themselves their own progress that they're making. And what is one important and sign of making progress in devotional service is that naturally, without a strenuous endeavor, you could say, the taste that we previously had for material pleasure diminishes. It diminishes automatically by that, not in the sense of automatic, mechanically automatically, but by our attempt to execute the process, by our attempt to, if it's chanting or hearing or repeating or whatever, by our attempts to do that, there's a pleasure that's derived from that. And that pleasure supersedes the pleasure that we used to get by doing mundane things. And so that's a good indicator. I'm making a little advancement. I don't like to do the same things that I used to do as much, you know? And it's not by a forceful restriction. It's by a joyful pleasure. Param drishva nivartate, that one experiences a higher taste. And that's what I like about studying all these little verses. They're not standalone. They always have a link to something else that Krishna said, and you apply that, and that's why that. So that the taste that we experience by chanting or hearing or even eating prasadam, etc., that taste is a different. It's of a different category. It's of a different pleasure, and the lesser and the other taste that we have for, because everybody, it's just a natural thing, everybody wants to be happy. Unfortunately, we're brainwashed. Unfortunately, we're brainwashed thinking that material pleasures will give us happiness, even though we've experienced 10 quadrillion, maha million times that it's not true. Or that the happiness that's derived is so insignificant. Anyway, so we'll go on to 10:10. Tesham satata yukdanam bhajatam kriti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam pham yenamam upayantite. And this is really sweet to understand what Krishna is saying here. Okay, here's what he says. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. That is showing how Krishna is partial to his devotees. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So that's very important and very significant, because again, sometimes there's a feeling of inadequacy. I'm not smart enough. I'm not intelligent enough. I don't remember enough. I don't this, I don't that, whatever. But if I'm constantly making an endeavor to somehow or other please Krishna, please Srila Prabhupada with my body, mind, and words, it's not by my endeavor, but it's complemented by my endeavor. Krishna within the heart. Krishna enlightens one from within the heart. Not that one has to have a PhD and have all the verses of Bhagavad Gita memorized, and one has to know this and that. That might help, it might not help, whatever. But it's by our loving rendering of service to the Lord that He enlightens His devotees from the heart. Just like He did to Lord Brahma. That's the whole process. First verse of the Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Hriday Adikavaye Muyanti Yat Suraya. That Lord Brahma, the engineer of the universe, when he came to consciousness on top of that lotus flower, at that particular initial point, he didn't have a clear understanding of who he was and what he was supposed to be doing, what his purpose in life was, what his job was, what his job description was. And then, this is a very brief description, then by performing austerities for 100 years of the demigods, which is like an incredible amount of time, he was enlightened by Krishna within the heart, even though there was no external or other stimuli present. Krishna enlightened him, and he could understand who he was, what he was supposed to do, and how to do it, and so many things, and his relationship with Krishna. So that's the thing that I'd like to stress. So that Krishna enlightens one. It comes from him. We make our endeavor. Of course, it's not like we can't expect that without endeavor there'll be that reciprocation. But with our endeavor, then the Lord gives that reciprocation. So I'll read a little bit from the purport there. This is the 10th verse of the 10th chapter. In this verse, the word buddhi yogam is very significant. We may remember that in the second chapter, the Lord, instructing Arjuna, said that he had spoken to him of many things and that he would instruct him in the way of buddhi yoga. Now, this buddhi yoga, or surrendering with intelligence, is explained. Buddhi yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness, and that is the highest intelligence. So intelligence here doesn't mean IQ level. It's not a question of IQ level. Intelligence here is that intelligence that's innate in the living entity to understand when some of the dust is cleansed off the heart, that I'm part of the Lord. That's who I am. My identity here in this material world as a this or a that, as a big person or as that very significant person or an insignificant person, that's not who I am. That's a temporary manifestation of my previous actions. But I am an eternal servant of the Lord. And to act on that, or attempt to act on that platform, that's the intelligence that's being spoken about here. Bodhi means intelligence. This is the purport again. And yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness in devotional service, his action is called Bodhi yoga. In other words, Bodhi yoga is the process by which one gets out of the entanglement of the material world. Now, skipping down, the last paragraph of this 10th chapter, 10th verse says, a person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he still is not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instruction so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. And what's the qualification for getting those instructions like that? Prabhupada says, he gives us, the qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion renders all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him the chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him. So that's so encouraging. That's so encouraging. In the beginning, when we first take up the process of Krishna consciousness, we're often instructed so many different types of instructions. One is control your mind, don't listen to your mind, you know, use the scriptures as your intelligence and this and that. But here, Srila Prabhupada saying, actually, at a certain point, Krishna will instruct us from within our heart. We get an inclination to do something. We get an inspiration for this or that. Where is that coming from? It's coming from the Lord. Now, there's always a person who's going to say, but what if I get some weird thoughts or weird instructions? Well, it's always good to check, you know, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Check with others and make sure. But at least the point I want to make here is that Krishna's there within our hearts. He wants us to make progress. So he's arranging us to make progress. So we get different inspirations, and particularly even in this month of Kartik, when you get an inspiration to do some devotional service, do it. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Do it. And then you'll perhaps experience that you'll get some more inspiration. Because you listen to the first inspiration that Krishna gave, he'll give you some more. And you can see how that continually grows and grows and grows. Okay. Back to those three topics, sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, or knowledge about the Supreme Lord and our relation to the Supreme Lord, and then the process of how to attain it. This 10th verse is particularly talking about that, the process of how to attain it. Be constantly devoted to serve with Krishna with love, that Krishna will give the understanding by which we can come to him. So the 11th verse is talking about the goal. Tesham evanukam partam aham agyana yam tama nasham yatma bhavo bhava so jnana dipena bhaskata Jnana Deepa, the light of knowledge. Okay. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. That's very similar to the prayer that we say in the beginning of class, that our spiritual master forced, opened our eyes with that torchlight of knowledge. That torchlight of knowledge, it illumines one from within and gives one a dedication and a clear path on how to make progress in spiritual life. So I'm going to read some parts of the purport there. This is the one, two, third paragraph. The Lord tells Arjuna that basically there's no possibility of understanding the Supreme Truth, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, simply by speculating. For the Supreme Truth is so great that it's not possible to understand Him or achieve Him simply by making a mental effort. So we're often warned of that by our small fund of knowledge. You could compare it to like a mustard seed. We're like a little mustard seed. And Krishna, although he's unlimited, at least for this example, we can compare him to the Meru Mountain, okay? He's way bigger than that, but just for the example's sake. So how can that little teeny mustard seed understand the glories and the dimensions and the qualities and the characteristics and what comprises the whole Meru Parvat, the whole Meru? It's impossible. So, and this is why reading and hearing of shastras is always, always stressed. Because, and especially now, as soon as we finish this, we're on our last verse for tonight, but this, the rest of this chapter, Vibhuti Yoga, or the opulence of the Absolute, describes many opulences of the Lord that are beyond our, you know, when we have a traditional conception of God, you could say God, right? And you say, well, God's great, God's love, God's all-powerful. So many things, and they're true. It's true. But here you get information as to how great He is. And it just expands. So, well, I never thought of that. I knew it was great, but I didn't think that He could do it. And His potencies are inconceivable to us and contradictory, too. And that's the thing that just expands our understanding of what it means to be the all-powerful. And that's why hearing is stressed over and over again. Hearing through from authorized sources so that we can overcome our limited conception of what God can do and what He can't do. For example, one thing that we hear so many things, right? We hear so many things in the scriptures, and we hear that Krishna's in the heart of all living entities. We hear that over and over again. But what that means is that Krishna has a relationship, a distinct and unique relationship with me. Not just with Prahlad Maharaj or, you know, Sukadeva Goswami or, you know, King Prithu or, you know, not just those perfected beings, but with every, no one is insignificant to the Lord. No one is left behind in the Lord's personal realm of relationship. No one, everyone, and not just human beings. Every spirit soul has an eternal, unbreakable relationship with the Supreme Lord. And it's just that we've messed ourselves up so much that we've totally, completely forgotten that. But it's there, and it's sometimes, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I experience the mind constantly giving barrages of negative thoughts of how, well, it applies to that person, but it doesn't really apply to me. No, Krishna's got something for all of us. And he's feeling, and he's anxiously waiting for each living entity to take that those steps closer to him. Just like in the story of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the story of the sojourn, of the travel, the spiritual journey of Gopakumar. Gopakumar actually is born in and around Govardhan Hill in India. But still, somehow or other, for some reason or other, he doesn't get much information about Krishna at that particular time. And so he goes search, but he has a spiritual quest, a spiritual inclination. And he goes searching for spiritual perfection throughout the universe. Throughout the universe, over millions of... Okay, I'm saying millions, but a tremendous amount of time. It took them, you know. Go every place, Brahmaloka, and beyond the material universe. To even went to Ayodhya, to Lord Ram's abode, and this and that. Finally, at a certain point when he makes it to Lord Narayan's abode, Vaikuntha in Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha's abode, Lord Narayan says to him, "I've been waiting for you. I'm so glad you're here. I've been waiting for you and watching and waiting. When will you come to me? I've waited so long for you." And that's what Krishna's going to say to each one of us when we finally make it there. He said, "I've looked down the path thinking, when is he going to be coming, walking on this path back home?" And that's not just for him, that's for every one of us. He's there anxious. He has, just like we have so many friends, and you have, you know, on your profile, your Facebook profile, you have, you know, X hundred amounts of friends or this and that, but you don't have a real, highly unlikely that you have a real personal relationship with all 695 friends on your profile, right? But Krishna has that ability. Not only 695, but 695 million, maha million, quadrillion, unlimited zillion. And it's personal, each and every one, knowing where we've been, what we've done, what our desires are, and so many things, what our endeavor has been. And he's made a note of that. So this is just a glimpse of... But hearing these things over and over again, we can get a glimpse of how Krishna is personally attached to all of us and how we can become qualified again, or cleansed of our misconceptions and become attached to him. I'm going to read the last paragraph of this purport. This is the 10th chapter, 11th verse, last paragraph of the purport. "Due to the contamination of material association through many, many millions of births, one's heart is always covered with the dust of materialism." So if we stop the sentence there, you kind of feel like, But the sentence doesn't stop there, because Srila Prabhupada never leaves us down in the dumps. He always brings us to the highest level. So then he says, "But when one engages in devotional service and constantly chants Hare Krishna, the dust quickly clears and one is elevated to the platform of pure knowledge. The ultimate goal, Vishnu, can be attained only by this chant and by devotional service and not by mental speculation or argument. The pure devotee does not have to worry about material necessities of life." Should I say that again? The pure devotee does not have to worry about the material necessities of life. And I'm going to finish this sentence and then go back to the pure devotee in case you're thinking, "Yeah, but I'm not a pure devotee." We're going to get back to that, okay? "He need not be anxious, because when he removes the darkness from his heart, everything is provided automatically by the Supreme Lord, who is pleased by the loving service of the devotee. This is the essence of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. By studying Bhagavad Gita, one can become a soul completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord and engage himself in pure devotional service. As the Lord takes charge, one becomes completely free from all kinds of materialistic endeavors. So back to that concept, perhaps there was a couple of minds that were saying, oh yeah, but I'm not a pure devotee, I'm so mixed with material desires and this and that. But we need to understand what it means when Prabhupada refers to pure devotional service and refers to his followers as pure devotees, because he does refer to them as us, as pure devotees. And what is that purity? The purity is that we're attempting to understand, and we do understand, that Krishna is the supreme goal. There's no one... Okay, I'll finish that sentence. There's no one here that has the concept of, yeah, I like Krishna, but I think Lord Shiva is the supreme, and I'm going to worship Krishna and Shiva at the same time. You know, maybe somebody who just comes in off the street might have that concept a little bit, but anyone who's heard from Srila Prabhupada's book understands that the goal is service to Krishna. Krishna the person, the supreme person. That's our goal. We might be highly unqualified, we might be highly contaminated by that dust, the materialistic contamination, but that's our goal. So that's how Prabhupada, that's how what he evaluates as a pure devotee. That's how he evaluates a pure devotee. Because our goal is that. It's not any other goal. We're not worshiping for the fame, adoration, distinction. We're not worshiping for a nice house and a nice car and a Mercedes-Benz, etc., etc. But even though those desires might be there, if we're worshiping Krishna because he's the Supreme Lord and I'm his servant, then that's pure devotional service. And gradually through the process of executing devotional service, that'll become more and more apparent even to ourselves. So those are just a few thoughts on these very important verses of the Gita. Some of the commentators of Bhagavad Gita, some of the acharyas, the previous acharyas, say this is the end of Lord Krishna's instructions to Arjuna, right here, in this 10th chapter, these Chatur Sloki verses. And the rest is additional information, but as far as his instructions to Arjuna in the Gita, they started with, in the second chapter, when Krishna said, you're speaking learned words, but you don't really know what the truth is here. You don't really know what's worthy to be lamented over or not lamented about. So from that to this 11th verse in the Gita, these are the essence of Krishna's, essence of Krishna's instructions to Arjuna. And then the 12th, the very next verse, and the next verses, Arjuna is going to summarize his understanding of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's the only place in the Gita where Arjuna expresses that understanding like that. In the 11th chapter of the Gita, when Krishna shows him his universal form on request by Arjuna, then Arjuna offers a lot of praise and glorification and expresses his fear also of that form. But it's different than what he's expressing in the next verses of this 10th chapter, where he's expressing the essence of his understanding of Krishna being the Supreme Lord. So that's a few little thoughts, or a lot of different thoughts on those four verses. If you had a comment or question or correction, you can do so. Yes? Thank you.
A very nice verse in the scriptures relating to the subject matter tonight is where Krishna says, I am that ability and intelligence in man.
Yes.
And I am perfection personified throughout the three worlds, both manifested and unmanifested. If you become conscious of me, you will cross over all the obstacles of this conditional life. If, however, you do not become conscious of me, but rather hold on to your false ego, not seeing me, you will be lost.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for bringing it up. That's Krishna's giving Arjuna, after he finishes all of his instructions, Krishna gives Arjuna a choice. Do you understand? Do you get it? Are you willing to do what I'm saying? If you act according to my instructions, you'll be okay, and if you don't, then you'll be lost. You give them the choice. Some people think, that's my favorite verse, because he's giving him a choice. Anyway, thank you for that. Volga. Prabhu.
Thank you for that. I was wondering, you were speaking in the beginning about how devotees experience more pleasure than in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he came. Can you elaborate more on how devotees enjoy more than Krishna, and that devotional service is, you know, is more blissful? I'm just curious.
It's a reciprocal process. What immediately comes to mind, I'm not exactly sure, it's been a hit on what you're saying, so you might have to pull me back. It's just in the example of the queens in Dwarka. The queens in Dwarka are there sweeping the palaces themselves at certain points, even though their palaces aren't dirty like our houses are. But they're sweeping those palaces because when Krishna sees them do that, it gives him pleasure. And then what happens is, when they see that Krishna got pleasure from that, they get pleasure. And then, when Krishna sees that they're even happier, then he gets happier. And it goes on and on, just like in the example that you referred to Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya, because Krishna, in 25 words or less, because Krishna wanted to experience how is it that Srimati Radharani loves me so much? How is it that she gets so much more pleasure? What is it that she feels? He couldn't assimilate that in his Krishna form. So he took the combined form of Radha and Krishna, and then he could get that. But you know what? I think I totally missed the point of your question. So you want to rephrase it? Sorry.
I was just curious how devotees, the process of bhakti, you can enjoy more than Krishna. You know, who's that supreme bliss enjoys? You know.
That's Krishna's mystic potency, inconceivable. How do you like that for a sidestep of an answer? Ramiya, you want to add anything? I mean, the thing is that, I don't. Good, thanks. Anything else? Good, I'm glad we left it all nice and clear. Thank you. Bhagavati ki jai. Bhakti bhakti ki jai. Go pray and be happy.